up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Going home face, Dex and Jax. I'm Tom Howe. Ricky on the board, S&P futures down 15. NASDAQ futures down 166. Dow is up 66 after a new record. Of course, we had a couple stocks in the Dow that really were going crazy yesterday. So the Dow is it's pretty much of a useless index. I mean, it's a cap-weighted, not cap-weighted, it's a price-weighted index, and it really depends on the few stocks that are in there. And just for education purposes, the $1 move in a stock there is like almost $7 in the Dow Jones average. So one stock's up $10, it's like $70. So it's a little odd for an average. Now the other ones are cap-weighted, meaning the amount of shares times the price and what percentage that is of the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ or anything is then the percentage of that stock in the index. So if a stock were to double, say, and it was 2% to start out with, well, it's now, you know, 3.9-something-something of the index for the next move. So those are your other indexes. That's how you end up with 6 and 7 stocks can be 40 or 50% of the index because they just get that big. I mean, this is nothing new. It happened all along. It happened in 2000. Well, it's happened the whole way, but now it's even more so. Do we have Professor Kevin?
You do, and stop throwing math at me first thing on a Friday morning.
Well, you know, when you talk about the records and stuff, the Dow is dominated by, and the weird part of it is, if, say, you have Coca-Cola, which is $69, a dollar move in Coke equals the same as a dollar move in Microsoft, which is $481. Even though it's such a percentage,
you don't get the gist of what "stop throwing math at me" means.
All right. Well, hey. Well, then, what about those two cases Lou was talking about yesterday? The Utah thing, and what's the other one? Georgia Tech, where they're suing the guy, or is it Georgia?
I think that was Georgia.
What?
What did I tell you? I may have texted this to you again. How many times have I said somebody is going to test this model? They're going to determine that they really are direct employees of the university, and the student-athlete thing is just a load of crap. You may have very fine students who happen to be athletes, but this idea that they're not employees of the university is crazy. And so the university is now taking steps to employ things like a non-compete clause, but walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, might be a duck, and that's what I think the interesting part of it is. I always figured it would be a player, an injured player who sues for workman's comp, who files for workman's comp and then pursues it, and says that all of this silly structure that they have is just a sham. But if you look at what it really is, it's an employment situation. But this time, I think you got the university sort of wading into those waters.
Well, you know, we've had obviously many discussions on this because it's fascinating. It's very similar to the stock market. It's very similar to business. It's leopards don't change their spots. These are just all people. I thought for the last 5-6 years, Kevin, that somehow or another, and it's rare in employment situations, the athletes had somehow sprinted ahead a little bit in their rights and privileges versus the school. I mean, they could pretty much, schools, I think probably could, you know this better than me. I think after we were in school, I think a scholarship was a renewable one-year deal. But I don't really know of any, I use the term real school, I never saw, didn't happen. You know, the Notre Dames, the Michigans, the Ohio States of the world just say, you didn't grow enough, you know, get the hell out of here. They wouldn't play the guy, maybe wouldn't, you know, made it feel like he didn't belong or something, but really he had to leave on his own to get your scholarships back.
You know? And then they started to run him off instead.
Yeah, well, the two guys that were the creme de la creme of that back in our era was Bob Devaney at Nebraska and Daryl Royal, who don't know how to speak Texan. They were huge at that, at Texas and Nebraska, right? I mean, they were, and I think probably, what's his name? Alabama guy, what the hell is his name?
Bryant?
Yeah, DeBar. I think they were all pretty good at that. And so they would run people off. And college ball is, you know, it's, if you don't, I don't know how you, I'm no expert at it, Kevin, but I learn and I remember. That's my I guess my blessing and my curse. Went out to see who was the coach at Southern Cal? He's now the pro coach. He's 100 years old. Pete Carroll. When they played against Charlie Weiss that year, John's brother Pete, who played for, I mean, this is all so insidious. Pete Carroll was the backfield coach, defensive backfield coach at Minnesota, when Pete was a linebacker there. So they were, you know, pretty good buddies. And the head coach was Lou Holtz. So, I mean, these guys all have this kind of tree where they have these assistants and they all wind around. So, anyway, Pete Carroll's the head coach. And, of course, Southern Cal has their walkthrough on Friday, essentially at Notre Dame Stadium. Now, they actually stayed in Michigan City. And they used Michigan City's got this really nice, like, high school field downtown where they have drum corps events and everything. It's a nice place for high school. High school / municipal kind of place. That's where they actually had their practice. But then they got on a bus and came down to Notre Dame, the stuff they're doing there is like basically throwing passes same time of the day to see where the sun is and all that kind of crap. Well, you know, which you need to do. So they wander out with probably, I don't know, Kevin, 85, 90 people, whatever. It might have been 100. I mean, you didn't take everybody on the road. And you see these people walking around out there. And all of a sudden, these like seven or eight really big dudes, maybe five or six of them, look like they're, you know, Pacific Islanders. I didn't know them, but I guess they're Samoan. And I go, well, that's got to be the offensive line, right? And then about six other guys come by, and they're big dudes, and they're taller than me, and I'm, you know, 6'4 at the time. And I go, well, there's the defensive line. But you probably had 40 people there that were, you know, 6'1", 6'2". Most of them white guys that obviously didn't grow. They were fast as hell. They're all going through this, but they were never going to see the field. So, and I didn't see Southern Cal saying not only you lose your scholarship because you didn't grow. They were coming with on the bus. They were suited up. They were never going to get in the game, Kevin. And that was Southern Cal, for God's sake. And so, I mean, I think for a while now it's the players move if they feel like it, and the teams are sort of stuck with them. Maybe you hope some guys leave that you want to leave or something, but it's been kind of, well, you said it more than me, it's been kind of a big, kind of a cesspool now for what, 5-6 years, and now the schools are saying, wait a minute, we're not going to do all this for you, we're only to have you leave. We just paid up a bunch of dough. Now, tuition, maybe they don't care about, but recruiting the kids got to cost what? I mean, they're flying them in on private jets now, for God's sake. They're not on Southwest Air. They're just recruiting somebody. And the strength coach and the dietitian coach and all the other crap. There's a huge investment in these guys for them just to say, see ya, don't you think? I mean,
well, I think there is. As you noted, it used to be a very one-sided relationship in favor of the schools. Now the players have a lot of freedom, a lot of freedom to move. They've overturned a lot of their restrictions in court, which, you know, is to their credit, at least from a legal standpoint. So nobody likes it. Everybody says, well, God, I hate this portal thing and the amount of movement and there's no loyalty anymore and all that. And there isn't, but there never was any loyalty the other way in the first. Anyway, and so now they're running a pro football league. But they're running it without any kind of bargaining with the players, without any kind of set of rules, which is pretty interesting to see. It's pretty interesting to watch if you're just looking at it from an analytical standpoint, because you know, at least in the NFL, they come up with labor agreements, and you know, those may favor one side over the other, you know, more, but regardless, it's everybody signs the contract, and that's the way it's going to be until the contract expires, and then we'll get to the next one. And that's not how it is in college. In college, the rules, ever since the players got more freedom, the rules have just been, let's make it up as we go along, and then let's see what passes muster legally. And the biggest example is that once the players got paid, then the next thing was, well, then I shouldn't have to sit out for a year when I transfer, because that's keeping me from earning a living.
Which is true. Can't argue with that.
And so that got struck down. And so now, not only there is no consequence to leaving, and that's why you see so many players who play at 3 and 4 schools, you know, I don't want to say it's out of control, because there is no control.
Maybe it ought to be
out of control, I think somewhere along the way people will figure out how to do this, but it shows up. It shows up in the with the coaches too. This is, you know, you would never run an NFL franchise this way. How many coaches get 10-year contracts, or even 8-year or 7-year contracts? You know, they don't. And then when they do renewals or extensions, they aren't that long. You have to be really, really established with your team before they say, hey, we want you until you don't want to coach anymore.
Well, two questions. When the students go to court, the student athlete goes to court and says, you're depriving me of my livelihood, what that says to me is, I'm here to play football or basketball. Whether I go to class or ever get a degree is totally anecdotal.
Well, yeah, I get how you feel that way, Tom, but I would say not necessarily.
But I'm saying,
I just want to get paid for your labor.
I'm not feeling that way. They just told me that.
No, they didn't.
They say my job these next 4 years is to play football. That's my living.
I understand that's the living, but that doesn't mean you can't go to school.
Well, I'm saying it's clearly in the second spot. Maybe it ought to be, you know, at that level. I mean,
for a lot of guys, it clearly is.
Yeah, but,
you know, and it probably is for even the most studious of them.
But why do sports fans? And, you know, don't ever forget that fan is short for fanatic, so there's not looking for any logic here. And you mentioned that there'd be a collective bargaining agreement, which is going to put the pressure at, it's going to go one way or the other. There's an awful lot of people that go, wait a minute, you can't let these people have this, these players have this kind of freedom. I tell you what, since the day I took antitrust, there is no reason other than fans love it, fanatics. There is no reason anywhere on this earth for there to be a draft, for there to be a salary cap, for the people who are negotiating as players to try and get everything they can to have the guys coming in have salary caps on them when they're not sitting at the table. That, to me, I know Lou thinks it's great. I think that is so un-American. The thought of your kid entering a draft between the accounting firms to see who gets him and he can't negotiate between them is so un-American and scary. Yet in football, because we like it, it's okay. Right? I mean,
well, yeah, it is, but I don't know that Lou necessarily thinks it's great as much as he will say it's part of the agreement. Everybody has signed off on it, so that's the way it is. And there are lots of, union shops in the world where, you know, when you come on board, you are subject to the rule, to the deal that the union has bargained. So it, you know, when you're saying not a seat at the table, that's not unusual either.
Well, it somewhat is, in the sense that when unions bargain, I mean, there's always going to be somebody that has the upper hand in negotiations, right? And I think when you have a union agreement, with essentially a cartel, the union never wins. How could you possibly? I mean, baseball, I think they might have because the owners are so dumb. But I mean, the idea of that the NFL people, players going up against the league is a fair fight. I've never believed that.
Yeah, I think the NFL players have made some progress, but the way it used to be, if you looked at the major sports, and I probably am excluding hockey from this, but it was always that the players always won in baseball. Marvin Miller was brilliant, and the owners hated him, so their whole strategy was always to defeat Miller rather than to come up with a deal. A deal everybody could live with, and so they lost at being vindictive time after time. The football players always lost to the owners, and then in basketball they always seemed to work it out.
Well, that's probably true,
and that, you know, that's sort of the history of the various leagues. Now, you know, basketball's had its contentiousness along the way, so it's not like this perfect thing where everybody goes into the room and says, hey, we have it, let's shake hands. But they do tend to not have the same kind of labor strife that the others do.
Well, I think that in the baseball, I've had this, boy, you don't ever run an adult beverage before you enter this debate. Everybody seems to think, and maybe you and I just said it, that somehow or another, the players' union has beat up on the owners in baseball, and I would say economically, there's one reason, which you just articulated probably better than I'm going to, but there's one reason, and that is the owners are so in love with power in their own mind that they've made some really pretty bad economic decisions. And one is, if you're going to have free agency for a limited number of people, they're going to get paid more than they would be worth in the free market. So if you have three left fielders available to tip the balance of power, they're going to get paid more because they're the only people that are essentially in play. And they're going to get paid more than everybody else. But then on top of that, Marvin Miller was smart enough to say, okay, now we're going to have this arbitration agreement where if you're hitting .290 as a left fielder and somebody who's hitting .310 just got $40 million and you go to arbitration and go, hey, that's the rate. I'm .290. I deserve .35, and the arbitrators are going to go, man, it looks pretty good to me. I mean, right? I mean,
one of the few things that Jerry Reinsdorf ever said, and where I can agree with him, is that arbitration makes me responsible for paying equal to my stupidest competitor.
That's exactly right. But I think the part that most, you know, virtually all fans, I mean, this is not something people study, so I'm not criticizing people. I mean, hell, they probably have a family to take care of every day. I don't, so their time is spent doing better things. But if you walked into any saloon tonight and said, is there free agency in baseball, you could bet $5 everybody in the place, and they would all bet that there is. Yet I'm going to say that free agency in baseball, when you get drafted or you get signed, and you look at all the minor leagues and all the major leagues, free agency applies to 0.1% of anybody in that system. So the answer, is there free agency in baseball, is an overwhelming no for just about everybody involved. If you're signed to a single A contract or get drafted and you're a shortstop and your team has five shortstops, good luck to you, buddy. Unless they decide to trade you somewhere else, you're going nowhere. And I guess there is some sort of a thing that after 5 years you can switch and they get a compensating pick or something.
They also have a Rule 5 draft now for the minor leagues as well as the major leagues. And for listeners or anybody who doesn't know what Rule 5 is, it means if somebody isn't on the major league roster, that's the 40-man roster, and that's a whole lot of minor leaguers that are like that, then they have a draft and any team can go in and claim that player. The catch for that team is you have to put them onto your major league roster for at least a year or give them back.
Which means it's like three guys a year.
It's a small number, but there are some, and there's some real success stories out of that.
I understand it, but I'm saying if you look at the total amount of people in the major league, how many guys would you guess, boy, where's somebody would know this, How many people do you think the Cubs have under contract? I'm going to say 400. Maybe more.
Yeah, I don't know. We'd have to count up teams and multiply by what, 25 or 30 or whatever the number is.
Well, they've got two rookie teams, two single A's at least, right? One double A, one triple A. So that's, what, seven teams, six teams?
Yeah. Seven, so you're looking at 150 there?
Yeah, at least.
Eight would be 150 probably, plus the major league team.
Yeah, and I'm going to say that, you know, 90% of them are nowhere near being a free agent. Hell, how many people on the team are on a free agent? The 25. Yeah,
but what I'm saying is, if you have a guy who really is, he's a really good player, but he's stacked up behind, too many others at the same position, he will be taken in the Rule 5 draft. And he will be taken by a team that is not going to contend anyway, so they can afford to carry a roster spot like that.
Yeah, that's...
That's how it works.
Yeah, so. That's true. That's true. I get it. But I mean, it's interesting to see how this, if it's going to be one way, if all the pro rules get applied to the colleges, which I don't really want to see happen, or whether the people are going to say, how is there a draft in this pro league and not this pro league? I wonder which way it's going to go. I suspect it'll go towards the current NFL model because people are kind of used to that and like watching the draft night, even though it's so un-American and scary. But anyway, I don't know
if they'll actually have a draft of the high school players coming out because can I draft him? Can he clear admissions at my school?
Well, I think that might be going away to Dodo Bird.
It is and it isn't. That varies from school to school. But yeah, there's a lot of places where the admission standards are not substantial. But you do. There is a minimum, and even the NCAA has a minimum that you have to meet. So you have that, but I don't think anything substantial is going to happen about trying to let's use a nice word and say trying to rationalize the current system. I don't think anything substantial will happen until the large schools split off on their own and reorganize, and because this is exactly what we discussed on Wednesday, is that when you have 130 schools involved in Division I athletics, one size doesn't fit all of them, and so you're going to have to get down to that somewhere between 40 and 64.
We were kind of arguing about it on Tuesday, and Hal keeps sending me letters. He loves the Cinderella story. He loves the idea that some small school can get into the playoffs, and my point is, at some point, it just becomes a mismatch. And what are you doing? And I think we're pretty close to being there. Maybe not totally there, but I.
Yeah, the only difference I would cite in terms of how you've got these teams in the playoffs that just really don't have much of a chance, is their difference is talent. And when Alabama plays Eastern Illinois, or when anybody plays one of these 1AA teams, you're also talking about physical mismatches.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. And where there is just no way you're putting 270 pound linemen up against 320 pound linemen. Those kinds of mismatches. And at least in the cases of Marshall and Tulane and so on, they are not looking at that. That's not their model at all. They have every bit. They got their 320 pound guards and tackles as well, and they will have guys who are NFL prospects on their teams. Not as many as Ohio State will, but they'll have them. So they're not going to. When I say it's not the eighth graders against the fifth graders, in this case. It's just the best eighth graders against the other eighth graders.
Well, I think that when the split starts coming, where the entire, in my, again, on my side of the argument is the money. James Madison's entire academic or athletic budget for all sports is $1.7 million. Oregon's NIL budget just for football is $30 million. It's an economic mismatch. And what's interesting, Kevin, is everybody talks about how heavy these people are. It's funny. I mean, I do it too. And yet, when I think about it, that's sort of, when you really dig into it, that it's almost so ignorant. I mean, I watched Mount Carmel play the other night. They won the state championship at 8A. They got two tackles on defense that have to be 350 pounds. Kevin, it isn't a pie-eating contest. There's a difference between, I mean, you and I knew these people. I mean, Walt Podolsky at Notre Dame was 6'8", 265, and I think the dude had, if he had a 34-inch blue jeans, I'd be surprised. I mean, he was just a massive man. If you get somebody who's not heavy, who's 6'3", 230, there, you don't find people like that walking down the street. You can walk up and down Chicago all day and see one or two people like that. So just because somebody becomes a big fatso in high school and is 300, it's hard for somebody to push him around. It doesn't make him an athlete. It makes him a fatso.
It doesn't necessarily translate. Where it does translate, though, is when they get into a high-level strength and conditioning program. And now, you know, you're still going to have some girth there, and you definitely see that. You see, you know, a lot of big bellies, you know, and that's even at your, you know, your SEC schools and so on. But these guys are strong, and they're big, and they're quick. I heard somebody, a former Bear, and now I can't remember who it was, talking about, you know, how guys go after they retire. And he said some guys balloon up, and some guys lose a whole lot of weight, you know. And in fact, we saw Alan Page late in his career. You know, he was, when he came to the Bears, you know, part of the reason that that the Vikings were willing to part with him is Bud Grant just didn't like that he had gotten down to about 240 pounds playing defensive tackle. And Page was so extraordinary that he could still be effective. Now, he was late in his career, so he wasn't going to be as effective as he was when he was the MVP of the league. But he was still an extraordinary athlete, very quick, and very good at what he did. So, you know, so it did translate to, you know, to still being an effective player. But my goodness, you know, you don't see that anymore. The same thing in the Denver Broncos in the Elway era when Mike Shanahan was their coach. He always preferred a quicker, more nimble offensive line. So when everybody else had 320 pounders, he had 285 pounders on his line, and that, you know, that was his approach. So you see that, you have to be an athlete, though. You absolutely.
But if you're 285 and not fat, that is you're the top of the gene pool, for God's sake.
I mean, yeah.
How many people have you ever met? I know because I put on a few pounds. I was 6'4". If I'd have been Mr. Weight, I could have been a weight monkey. And if I wasn't on the roids, the best shape I was ever in, and I was lifting, you know, quite a bit with Dr. J and stuff. Kevin, I was 215. I was not 235 or 40. Where the hell was I going to get another 25 pounds of muscle? I just didn't have the body for it. Some people do, boy. It's different. It's different.
Yeah, don't I know it? You know, with my health issues over the last year, I, you know, my weight is now down to my high school weight. But definitely not high school proportions, because then I was an athlete and I was, you know, regular workouts, regular weightlifting, lots of running and so on. It's a huge difference in that regard. And I wouldn't argue with it, but what I'm saying is, when I say it's not the eighth graders against the fifth graders, you have guys that can, when you're saying pick on somebody your own size, they are actually picking on people their own size.
Well, you also have some people at all kinds of levels that if you play against somebody, and I've done this in basketball, where, you know, I was just stronger and better than the other guy. And I've been in games where the guy was stronger and better than me. I mean, this goes both ways, right?
I was going to say, when was that first one?
Yeah, it was. You know, it happened for a while, and then it didn't happen so often. But there's some people, if the guy across the line is nowhere near as good as they are, they just move him out of the way so the back can run through. There's other people that love the idea that you're beating up on somebody and do it every play. I mean, it's a different. I mean, and the attitude is, he's on the field with me, I deserve to kick his ass every play. Well, that's fine, but This is not, you know, when you wander a team into a place, I'm not big on mismatches, Kevin.
And you will find people who are a mismatch in their sport, who are just freaks.
Yeah.
Aaron, Yankees guy.
Aaron Judge or whatever.
Aaron Judge. Yeah, Aaron Judge is just, he is a freak of nature. At his size, that he can be so agile and so fast, he absolutely is a freak. So you have those even at the major league level, whether it's baseball, whether it's football. You get your Micah Parsons guys and people like that. But that's rare, and even then, there are ways that you can counter that.
Those guys are just amazingly quick for their strength and size, which is very rare. Very rare.
My old buddy Steve Niehaus was that way until he just he just got so beaten up in the NFL he has a ton of pain now, but he was second player picked in the draft the year he came out to after Leroy Salmon got picked, and Steve was, now again we're talking 255, 260 in those days as a defensive tackle. But he was so fast that if you ever saw him and Steve Sylvester playing in the bookstore basketball tournament, because they played high school basketball together at Moeller in Cincinnati, and you watch these guys playing forward, and they were guys who went on to NFL careers as first round draft pick, NFL career, one on the offensive line, one on the defensive line, and you watch that the athleticism and the speed compared to other really good athletes, but not that caliber of athlete, and it was just an awesome thing to see.
If you didn't have too many beers and you watched him shoot pool at Nicky's, you knew he was different. He walked like a ballet dancer.
Yeah.
Even though he's a big man. He walked like Jackie Gleason. And that same sort of thing. And remember when Paul Newman said about look at the fat man. He walks around the table like he's a ballet dancer.
Yeah.
I mean, there's people that are like that, and it's just it's in the genes, and I guess we don't have them. Hey, Kevin, every man look at why I do this to myself and to our listeners, I have no idea. But is the Fed met the other day? Talk about page two, huh? Going from football to the Fed. They snuck out on everybody this thing about they're going to go back to whatever quantitative easing light, it appears. They're going to start putting more money in the system. And
good. We need that. We badly need that.
Well, no, and but it is absolutely, at any given time, it seemed like your policy was either you needed it or you didn't. I mean, you put money in, you take money out, those kinds of things. But now I think it is. I don't know why, Kevin. Maybe just because I'm watching it more, or maybe I don't like the politics of the last 20 years, not just the last year. I mean, I don't think I've had a president I like since Ford. But the split in who's the winners and the losers somehow right now is getting more and more seeming to me right out in front of people's faces. It's not an economic decision here. It's not. And remember, I was what day was it? Wednesday. What the hell was on Wednesday? We were talking about how somewhere, some way, if they cut this rate a quarter point, some buffoon or buffoonette is going to start talking immediately how credit card rates are going down. I'm going home early because I have a drink with my lawyer and judge buddies. I turn the car on, and there's some babe on News Radio 78. It's great for borrowers. Your credit card rates are going down. It couldn't have been an hour after the announcement. Some idiot was saying that. Are you expecting a letter in the mail this week that your credit card rate went from 28 to 28, 27, three quarters this week? If you're looking for
I can't say I pay close attention, because when on the rare occasion that I actually use the credit side,
saying they should tell you tomorrow, if it's such a big deal for you, you should be more anxious to go credit now that you're 27 and three quarters instead of 28. They're not shifting at all. this is so bizarre.
What a deal.
Yeah, I mean, what a deal. So, I mean, here's a flat-out lie that this is even being told by somebody in the White House or any other place. People just, do they not know? Anyway, but this is starting to happen. So here's what I dug up. Oh, God. Just to see what, I've got the hyperinflation. This is the Weimar Republic from 1918 to 1924. Kevin, they had the amount of marks per U.S. dollar in 1918 were roughly maybe 110. By 1924, I can't even ask you to guess how many, because I'm trying to read the damn thing here. I'm going to say 100, 3, 6, 9, 12, 100 with 15 zeros after it. With the amount of that's how much money these idiots poured into the system. All right. Now, their stock market went from, let's see, maybe 205 to 100, 3, 6, 9 zeros after it. That's now. That's in marks. They actually went up in terms of dollars as well. And virtually everybody, and I'm going to say if he went back to, God, who could even do this? Maybe Mike, when he was over there in Germany and as a soldier, he, as an officer, I'm going to say some of the people who were able to buy huge hunks of farms and stuff back in the 20s because they were paying their mortgage off with stuff that was worthless, probably still own the shit. That's how much of an advantage it is for some people. And since we've been doing this, now we're going to do it even more. I mean, everybody, I think, you know, I never really talk about the positions of my clients, but there's a lot of people that have, you know, some of my clients are older and stuff, so they really didn't want to be in some of the stuff that, you know, a lot of stuff that was up the queues and stuff this year, to kind of stay away from that. And we had some money in cash, which I guess maybe we regret now, but they were making something. But our biggest positions are probably in, for some people, are in the gold and silver. And for a couple of years, you know, that did anything. This year, Kevin, it's up every day. I mean, I'm going to say yesterday was, for some people, the best day they've ever had. We've got all kinds of shares in this GDX. For years, I sat with this thing at $30, hoping it would go to $35. It went up $4 yesterday. It's $89 today. This is what's happening to gold and what's happening to silver. And those guys, when the dollar, when the, this is the same thing, and I have to believe it's happening to some asset prices, some, not all, but clearly not downtown buildings here or some places. But it's anything that you think you can pay off. Why you and I had this long discussion a couple of weeks ago about what manner of moron would pay $8 billion for a football team that's making $200 million a year. Well, even if you get a 5% note, you're paying $400 million in interest. There blows away your profit plus $200 million. The reason why you do something like that is because you think that's you're going to be able to pay that note off in the next 5 or 10 years with money that's worthless. And that's exactly what this government's telling you is the case. And guys like you and me are just too stupid to realize it. Just saying. How's that for a statement?
Okay, yeah, I'll confess. I'll go with stupid.
I mean, we're going to sit there and say, no, our guys, be them Democrat or Republican, would never do that to me and favor those people, the plutocrats, them and their buddies. And I'm not talking about just Trump. I'm talking, no, they would never do that to me. Yes, they are. Just saying. Now, if you're my clients with the gold and silver, you're saying, what's the problem? You know, what I'm trying to do is keep people a pace here. This is what I'm, and fortunately, lately, I've been doing a pretty good job at it. But I'm saying it. But at least I understand what's going on. That this my stuff that I put these people, a lot of people in, and they were obviously every time I do something, they agree to me. I'm not just doing this on my own. That we benefited. We kind of anticipated that if this is where it was going to go, this might happen. But I do not have the ego to say gold miners were up yesterday because I was smart enough to pick them. They're up yesterday because money's coming into the system. And I really would hope that more people got a grasp of this. I understand they didn't all go to the University of Chicago and sit there with Milton Friedman, but this is happening to everybody, Kevin, and I don't think, and because a lot of people have 401ks and the market is part of this going up, just like in the Weimar, they think they're okay with it until maybe they aren't. But it feels pretty good right now, doesn't it? If you're one of those people.
Well, it does, and you know, look, we either, and you can, you know, you can have the same conversation with Carl because we have, and Carl's on. Carl, you're welcome to chime in too, but it's we either take our medicine the hard way, or we hope to God that we can grow out of this, and or it's just going to fall apart. And it's only, you know, the only question I would have is when. So I feel bad for my kids, but you know, I may not live to see the fall apart year. So we'll see how it goes. Depends on how long it takes. I heard somebody, you know, somebody opining the other day on TV saying, if you live the next 5 years, all of a sudden your chances of living to 100 years old are going to rise exponentially because of the advancements in the pipeline for medical technology. How's that? If you can just scrape by, I mean, that's just extending my plan to live forever.
Well, I think one thing's for sure is, you look in the mirror, you see yourself, obviously. A lot of amazing stuff has happened in my lifetime.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just in little stuff that you would never think about. I mean, my mother was missing a whole bunch of teeth. I've got all mine. I mean, nobody... They used to pull you... It was wrong, they yanked a tooth. The contact lenses that came out when I was in high school, because I hated wearing glasses... they're no good for sports. I mean, how people did play baseball with glasses, I forgot to say, but people have.
I didn't like wearing contacts, so...
You didn't like it when the infield blew into your eyes, that's for sure. But
at that point, it wasn't the hard contacts, so I just said the heck with it. And then on a daytime, you know, playing ball, I just wear sunglasses.
Well, what I'm saying is, the lenses I threw in when I was 17, I could never wear today. They were hard lenses. You could never... At that age, your eye gets enough oxygen to where you can wear those things. Every year you grow older, your eye needs... If I wasn't wearing gas permeables now, and every year the gas permeables have gotten better, I can still wear them. I could never wear those things.
Let's take it one step further. You can get LASIK now. You don't need them.
Well, you don't really need to get LASIK when you're older. It doesn't do you any good, but...
Well, I understand that, but there's a lot of people that that do.
Yeah.
Because that's one of those advancements that you're talking about.
Yeah.
We'll just fix your eyes. It'll cost you, you know, a few hundred bucks. And, you know, how many, you know, artificial limbs? You know, where we've gone with hearts, with valves, with, you know, anything for your cardiovascular system. You know, we can go on and on. And, you know, and you're right. You know, the advancements in medical technology are incredible, and actually, for a lot of that, that's the center of it. From a manufacturing standpoint, is right here where I live. It's actually one county away from Elkhart County.
Well, you still wonder on the stuff that Kyle's talking about,
and Dupuy.
Well, the chemo stuff is the cancer stuff. I mean, I'm probably going to this wake or whatever they call them now, celebrations of life. Maybe a week from Saturday, from the guy. Remember, a long time ago, Kevin, I was telling you about this African American guy who grew up in Mississippi, rural Mississippi, and he was telling me all about the medical care when he was growing up. Now the dude's, well, he's died, but I think he's 81 or something. So we're talking a long time ago. And I mean, it was listening to these stories, Kevin. I'm like, my God, this was America. His mother died from a back alley abortion, which is not good. On Christmas Eve, and he said he broke an arm playing football, and somehow, not only was the doctor 10 miles away, like nobody had a car, there was like one car in town, so if somebody had to go to the doctor, you waited till that guy came home from work and you borrowed his car, or he drove you, right, which is, you know, ugh. He went, the guy puts a cast on his arm, he goes, these guys were good doctors, he said, you know, the cast was good for like 6 weeks, because I couldn't get a ride back, I cut it off. Arm was fine. I went and played football the next day. I mean, he goes, the guy did a good job. I mean, you can't imagine that. They have like no medical care whatsoever, you know, basically in our lifetime. And yet, obviously, it's evolved a lot from them. That's why, you know, I guess you had to be at the top of the gene pool to survive, right? But you can imagine how many...
Just think, what was it, 70s was arthroscopic surgery, you know, came to be. You know, the difference. How long would Gale Sayers have played if they had arthroscopic surgery? And I was the same thing, actually. I tore cartilage when I was in high school, pre-arthroscopy days. You know, it wasn't debilitating, but it was intermittent pain for quite a bit of time. But they told me, yeah, we can go in and clean that out, but that's way, way more traumatic than the injury itself. So, the doctor said, we'll just give you a cortisone shot if you need it, and on your way. Well, advanced to about, it's probably been 15 years or more, I slipped on a wet spot on my driveway, and it was just, I didn't slip and fall, I just kind of jammed it, and all of a sudden I said, ow, that hurts, and that was my knee, and I haven't had pain in that left knee for a long time. And after a day of throbbing, I went in, I called my doctor, said, you got to get me in to see an orthopedic surgeon. And he took an x-ray, and he said, did you ever hurt your knee before? I said, yes, a lot of years ago, but yeah, I did. And he said, well, here's what happened. You sort of filled in where the crack was there with calcium deposit, and it served as a bonding agent for a lot of years. And he said, you jarred that loose.
Great.
Now I can go in and clean it up if you want me to. But he said, I can just give you a cortisone shot, and let's see how it does. And it hasn't bothered me since.
They used to give people cortisone shots like before every game.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Now they have an artificial cortisone. So it's not cortisone. It does the same thing. It's basically it's a lubricant.
This dude did a pre-arthroscope deal on my knee, Kevin. This is so bizarre. I must have heard it. It was a piece of car. I mean, I'm just walking along. I was working the truck docks. Got it hurt all night. But if I played ball, it was okay. So finally, I get to see this guy's course. It was like a 4-month wait, right? And he was the orthopedic guy of the South Side. So it's one of those places. Remember, this was medicine back then. They'd have like 50 people would have a 9 o'clock appointment, right? And then they'd get to you as you went. It was like an all day deal. It wasn't like it. 10 o'clock, the doctor saw you,
The medical industry wasn't taking great care of you?
Oh, God. So, finally I get in there, and the guy takes the x-ray, and he's messing around, and he goes, you jarred loose a piece of cartilage, just like you. And he goes, problem is, if it ever gets one of the corners, you're going down steps. If it catches, you'll have to land on your nose. And he says, but here, I can kind of feel it. It's sort of right here. And I go, okay. He says, well, you could take this surgery. We open your whole knee up, and blah, 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 and it's, 8 weeks recovery, and this is what you were talking about. They'd open your whole knee up to do anything. And he goes, or I could try and like get it right now. And I go, what does that mean? And I think I can get it right now. So he comes in with this little needle with some juice in there to deaden your knee. Then he plunks this big, maybe quarter inch needle in there in the plunger, whatever you want to call it, the thing you normally shove the penicillin in your behind. This was the sucks. This big plunger, so he sticks it in there. He's pulling on this thing. And he goes, cartilage looks just like airplane glue. My airplane glue. And he pulls a piece out. It's about maybe 3/8 inches long, and it's on his finger. And he goes, I think I got it. I think you're okay. Here's some cortisone. Come back in 6 months if it's still hurting. And I never went back. I'm sitting there going, what is it? What procedure was that, do you think? Other than something he just thought up. But it worked.
Probably made it up, yeah. Let's do this on the fly.
I saw the size of that hypo, and I'm going, what?
I can write an academic paper now.
Yeah, no kidding. But, I would if we possibly can, Kevin, at all levels of government here, can we just stand down and make some progress here? I really don't want to see this happening to the currency. Now, whether the other countries around the world are going to do the same thing, I think China is, from what Russell was saying. Otherwise, if you listen to the show, please don't do this. If somebody mentions the value of the dollar, even though I'm going to do it in 2 minutes, we go on break. Don't say, what about the pound? What about the yen? What about, the euro dollar? It's not about that. It's about the dollar versus the Ford you're trying to buy. You can say the price of the Ford went from 50 grand to 80, or you can say the price of the dollar went down by 35% in relation to the Ford. One is the same as the other. And you learn this if you're from Europe when you went across the border every day, it seems, and you had to change your currency for the other guy's currency. You understood that. And here we just sort of don't. And without digging into the politics side of this, without these labor numbers and stuff coming out, Kevin, I've been reading different stuff. Some people claim that the amount of hiring in some areas is still okay. Other people saying, who was telling me last night that the amount of planned layoffs in the next 2 months is worse than it's been in 40 years or something.
I got to look at the, I haven't looked at the Warren report in the last couple of months, but yeah, that'll tell us about them.
Is that where you get that from, that thing?
Yeah.
You think it's that bad?
You have to, you know, it's not every company has the requirement, but if you're a certain size and you have a certain amount of layoff, that you have to file ahead of time.
But that's if you're going to lay off, you know, what's the number? You think 100 or 200 or something? It's not if you lay off.
I don't remember what the hurdle is.
Because I know,
I look at it because, you know, if you are a community college, and the labor situation gets bad, guess who comes back for skills? We're countercyclical as far as the enrollments go.
Didn't they used to call that a regressive good?
I don't know the term.
I forget. God, it was so long ago, Kevin. But if the economy gets good, probably you're going to sell more Cadillacs. If the economy falls apart, you're probably going to sell more potatoes. I think it's a progressive and a regressive good, if I recall.
I'll take your word for it.
But so would you say you guys are a regressive good? I think I gotta go back and listen to Kevin now that I'm out of work.
Yeah, well, everybody should listen to Kevin.
Well, I mean, in your class. I mean,
I have a good story. I tell better stories than most. You know, one of the things that, especially my IT students, but, you know, one of the things that my students like in general is they say, I can read. I don't have any problem reading. I don't need you to come into class and tell me what's in the textbook. He said, but I want to hear what it's like working in the real world. They want your stories. And so, you know, I always make time for story time, you know. This is one of the things, especially the younger ones that I do. I do all kinds of stuff that is off script. And, you know, they know by about the third class when I say, so why am I doing this? And they will say, because you want to help us become better IT professionals.
You know? Oh, God.
That's what that's about. But that's a big part of at least it's a big part of what I do, and it's a big part of what I'm arm twisting all of my instructors to do.
Hey, we got a few minutes, Kevin.
You know, do this, and if you want to take a break, go ahead and take a break.
We'll take one later. Not much going on.
What significance, if any, do you assign to trade deficit reports that you know?
Well, that the I look more at the. There's something called a trade deficit, and there's something called a current account deficit.
Yeah.
And I don't really... It depends on the place, Kevin. It depends on the place. I mean, if it's an island that grows cocoa, and it's the only place in the world that we get cocoa, we're going to buy it from them. But then the dollars that we send them either are going to come back and buy something here, or they're going to buy something somewhere else, and the person who gets the dollars there is going to come back here and buy something here. It's kind of a circular sort of thing that I don't necessarily think that just because we have a trade deficit with somebody, if it's not something really unfair that they're doing, you're going to have trade deficits with people. I mean,
I think it's the macro number that's changed significantly. And I don't know if it's, first of all, you know, once is not a trend. So I wouldn't necessarily... buy into that. I was just wondering if you thought there was any significance to that. Is that indicating, because the ISM manufacturing numbers aren't saying that manufacturing is up tremendously.
No, it's not. I don't think it is.
But there are some things that we've done, you know, like for instance, I know the first industrial magnets made in the United States came off the production line last month. And, you know, that's sort of a big deal.
Well, sure it is.
We need to start doing some of that kind of stuff ourselves.
I would like to see much more of a plan where somebody can make decisions like that. Somebody like us can say, okay, we want to make this stuff here. By the way, we can go get capital. We don't have to, you know, we can. There's a lot to do in this stuff. You can't have whatever the tariff or wherever it is come off a month from now. You can't have uncertainty. You got to be able to get the money. You know, if you had a guess, how long did it take that magnet plant to get up and running, or was there one sort of here and they just expanded it, or what?
Yeah, I saw the virtually the headline and maybe a paragraph, so I haven't taken it apart. I may get some time when we go on break, but between semesters, but I just don't have time to do a lot of investigation now. But yeah, I was wondering if you had taken a look at that and what you thought.
No,
of
but
it.
I will do that as well.
Again,
hey,
there are cases where we have plants with excess capacity, and so they are able to get up and running real quickly. And then there's other things, if you're looking at chip foundries and things like that, where it's very long lead times to it.
I'm worried because my nephew's group that's in the...
It just depends on the circumstance.
Well, my nephew's group that's in the... some of it's, I think, self-inflicted, but because I don't think the owner of the place is doing so hot, but they were real busy for a while, and now they're just okay. So a lot of, the initial repair and some of the stuff that came back here for a little bit now seems to be slowing down just a hair. Hey, what do you make early on? Boy, oh boy. Of this Michigan fiasco. I mean, I listened to a YouTube tape last night, and this guy was thinking it's all a mirage. You know, Hal was talking about them setting the guy up. Boy,
I don't think that was the case in this one.
No, if this lady did this for money, boy, she wasn't very good at it. She almost got stabbed and she got pregnant. I don't think that's the case at all. Do you?
That's not good, honey potting.
No, that's not good.
I guess I saw something where she referred to in the 911 call that she made this guy's been stalking her for months. So there's a lot of story to be told here, because if he's been stalking her, that would suggest that the relationship it was over, but he wouldn't let go of it, he hasn't get and. Some people get really pathetic when it comes to that kind of stuff. has he been stalking her, or is that just her way of, getting the police to come out fast? I have no idea what. I don't know what to make of any of it. There's a lot of bits and pieces of information, and it needs to get pulled together. I think he's got a court appearance today, so there's probably some stuff that'll come to the fore. But,
Well, that's a lot of work.
And, the university's out there saying, hey, look at us. We reacted right away to this. And I don't think they did. This has been in the rumor mill for months. So
really?
But Sharon Moore, he was involved in that, that whole sign stealing thing too. So he got the job when Harbaugh left, but that doesn't mean he didn't get cited in the NCAA's report. So you got that little piece of dishonesty going on as well.
Well, then I don't know, but I doubt if he landed in one of these 8-year deals. Did he? Or did he?
I don't think so, and I don't think. That they said, oh, good, we can get rid of this guy for cause because we don't like him. We don't think he can coach because he's got a pretty good record, and they've brought in, they've signed highly regarded recruits. So I don't think that they were ready to pull the trigger on him from a performance standpoint. So I would take that out of the argument. But I think this is just a... as much as anything, it's just a tragic case of somebody, if you're top management of any kind, and, Lou will tell you this, it's probably, there's a lot to avoid, but I don't, people aren't going to avoid work relationships. And you talked about that yesterday, because when you work very closely with people, that can be kind of intense. It can be very personal. You get very close with people, and that can turn into a romantic relationship. Is it better that it not? Well, it's way better that it doesn't do that if you're married. That's a problem. And then you got to deal with that. But when you have a reporting relationship as well. And then you do things like, you know, promote somebody, you know, primarily based on that relationship. You know, maybe she was really good at her job, and that's why he wanted to promote her. But on the other hand, maybe it was like Bobby Petrino did at Arkansas, and that one has always intrigued me, because not only did Petrino get fired finally for lying to to his athletic director about the situation, but then 2 years later they hired him back as the offensive coordinator working for a different coach. What the hell kind of an institution is that?
Well, so. you sort of have to. I can understand when people are younger. How can I put this in the bar downstairs in the building? You know, we stop in there once in a while. This time of the year, they have for whatever reason, it's basically a dive bar, but they get party after party this time of the year, because you know it's people go in. There's some room, and you can, if you want to cater your own stuff in, they will, or else the guy downstairs will make you pizzas, whatever. I mean, it's just a kind of a casual. This kind of has replaced the formal Christmas party somewhere, you know, type of thing. I mean, there's other people in there. They don't close the place down or anything, and they're, you know, most of them are younger people. I'm going to say in their 20s, early 30s, and you just sort of see that. How can I put this politically?
Younger people will hook up sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at the guys are dressed pretty good. The ladies, most of them, let's say, are not really dressed for work. How can I say that properly?
You're saying they get tarted up?
I'm just saying they're dressed more than they would be normally.
And when people go out, some of them really want to look good. I don't blame them.
I mean, if you wanted to be a scumbag from the trading floor, you'd say they're working the order. You know, they want to look as good as they possibly can. Now, are they doing that because it's a work party or because there's somebody there they like or whatever? Same way with the guys, not one way or the other. I mean, the fact is, you're 25, you know, and whatever. And you're working with people, and you might like people you work with. Now, on the other hand, I think that, you know, I was never one of the guys that was messing around with all the girls on the trading floor. Maybe they didn't like me or whatever, but I had one girlfriend, and that was it. And when I got elected to the board, I wasn't one of these guys that was going to, you know, anybody ever wanted me to dash into the, you know, the stairwell. I was never one of those guys anyway. But I pretty much made a vow that said, look, I don't have those tendencies anyway, but there's no way on earth these people supported me that all of a sudden I'm going to be an ass and do something crazy. It was just it. I said, not here. I mean, it was never going to happen. And I think when you become like a football coach, you got to just say, guys, I'm not only just the coach here, I'm the moral leader of these group of kids. I can't be doing this. I mean, somewhere like you got to make that hard and fast, I just can't do it line, right?
Yeah, and that's exactly right. There's a real consciousness. So, you know, do I get that people get attracted to each other? Sure, no problem with that, other than to say, you're right, you have to exercise judgment. And, you know, when people say the heart wants what the heart wants, well, you know, BS to that.
Yeah.
It may, but, you know, really the ultimate point is exactly what you said, is you know, if you want the responsibilities of the job, if you want to be, you know, you want to be in that leadership position, then you have to do what it takes to be effective in that leadership position. And that is not carrying on, because there is no way that they could have, you know, hidden that whole
reason. Right.
Well, I won't say no way. I would say it's highly unlikely that relationship wasn't well known throughout the whole athletic department, including amongst the football players.
There's a Carl, pile in whatever you want. There's a book. Of course, when people have mothers that read a lot, first she tells me to read this book, The Bonfire of Vanities. Right, this is a long time ago. Well, obviously she was still alive. She's been dead 17 years. And so I read about two-thirds of the way through, and I'm getting pretty intrigued by it. And then she goes, I said, Mom, we're at breakfast. Don't tell me the ending. Of course, she tells me the ending. So I never finished the book. But there's a couple of page thing in there. Now, here's a guy who was, they used to ask him what his job was. Before anybody knew what a currency trader was, he would tell people, I buy and sell money. and they would look at him like he had four heads, and they go, oh, come on, nobody does that. Oh, yeah, that's what I do. I buy and sell money. It sounds so bizarre, but we know, and our listeners know what that means, but I don't know if the general population does. Well, there's one page where he's driving along, and he has the wife, and he's got the girlfriend, right? And he said last year he made $1 million. Now, his book had been, when do you think that was published? 1980 or 1977?
Yeah, something like that.
When $1 million was like a real lot of dough. And he's rattling off how he's got the wife, and all she does is give him a bunch of grief and a couple of kids, and all she does is spend money. And then he goes from the wife to the girlfriend, and she immediately lights into him about she needs a bigger and better apartment. I mean, he went from like one to the other, and he's totaling up all the money he spent over the course of the year. And it turns out he made almost exactly $1 million, and he spent $1,050,000. The wife had to have a Mercedes, and had it was in New York at the time, it was costing him $150 a month to park it. She had put something like 15 miles on it. and then they had a big doings down the block, you know, big formal doings. And instead of walking down the block, because he lived on the East Upper East Side or wherever the place was, the wife demanded they get a limousine to get picked up and drive around so they could get dropped off in front of the limousine, even though it was only like 300 yards away.
Oh, my God.
And then the girlfriend wanted something this and something that. And all the guy doing is puking out dough. And he wasn't happy with either one of them. The guy sitting there talking about his miserable life with the girlfriend wasn't pregnant yet, but the guy sitting there, you wonder, why do people do stuff like that?
That's the oldest story out there. It's the funny thing about it is that, you know, at a certain point, if you are successful, you get targeted by. You know, if you're a man and you're successful, you get targeted like this. I don't know if women that are successful get targeted like this, but yeah. Guys definitely do. I can tell you that from firsthand experience.
Well, they...
yeah, and the guys fall for it because, you know, John Hiatt wrote a really good song about that. It says, "I'm so easily led when my little head does the thinking."
Well, yeah, I mean, it you know, hello, and it's but it, the thing is that. So much, you know, and then, of course, now we have this, you know, this whole Me Too thing that started, right, where, oh, you know, I'm such a victim. Yeah, and you know, the $500,000 you got last year were the perks that the only thing you did was lay down. That was a big deal. And I get it in that abuse and harassment is never okay,
no,
right,
oh,
by
God.
by anybody's standards. But the thing is that, how much of that is entirely manufactured because the $500,000 stopped? Okay. I mean, and the answer is nobody knows, okay? And some of it is legit, and the problem, and it's the same thing that I've pointed out when it comes to, you know, some of the stuff that goes on in you know, divorce court and stuff. The problem is, if you're a judge, and some woman comes in and says, I think this guy's going to kill me, and wants a protective order, duh. Okay, if you say no, and then he does it, your name is in the paper.
Oh yeah.
As a judge. Yeah. Okay, so you know, there's a real problem there because, you know, you're supposed to, as a judge, you're supposed to judge. Hello. However, the penalty for being wrong in a situation like that is really, really severe. So on the other, you know, so you're inclined to just say, yeah. Well, guess what? It takes about 15 minutes for the members of the divorce bar to figure this out, and now all of a sudden it becomes a weapon that's used in every case.
Well, you know, it's the new. I was talking to my buddy Bill, the attorney, and he doesn't do a lot of this stuff, but he goes, you know, when you have an order, you can't go near somebody now.
Right.
They can actually they make you wear a leg brace.
Yeah.
And we go down to the bar. It's probably, it's maybe 3/4 of a block from where we live. He lives 2 doors down from me. He goes, you know, if Beth ever got one of those on me, it's like several thousand yards. I wouldn't be able to go to my favorite bar. even if I never came near her. He goes, the bar's too close to the house if I ever got a restraining order. Now, that would be awful, Carl.
Well, I mean, you know, the GPS, one of the things... The GPS monitor thing is for the most part a panacea, and the reason is that there's so many examples of people who have been ordered to be under electronic monitoring, okay, and then they go do something hideous, and they were outside of their allowed perimeter for, you know, 5 hours, and nobody did anything. Well, excuse me, all right, these things are, it's like so much else within our system that gets corrupted. All right. I mean, it's like, you know, we've gone around and around about Congress, you know, trading on inside information. There are a ton of people who believe that there's nothing illegal about that, and that's false. It doesn't matter who you are. All right. And yet, it wasn't that long ago, you know, Chief, when I was negotiating this LMCS, obviously as part of that process, I had a lot of material inside information on various companies because there were multiple firms that were potentially interested in buying mine. Okay. So I had a decent amount, and I mean, there was nothing wrong with me trading on the things I knew about Cisco because we were a customer of Cisco's. All right.
Yeah.
That's not material inside information. Anybody who is a customer of Cisco's, or anybody who puts their nose to the ground and does some, you know, I mean, I don't have any special relationship with their CFO or anything like that. You know, I mean, everything that I learned in that kind of a regard through the ordinary course of business, that's called ordinary business intelligence, and trading on that is a perfectly legitimate thing to do. Anybody can do it. All right, if you don't put the work in, that's your problem. But what you know, when I get a look at somebody's financials outside of the quarterly releases, that's a different thing. All right, and especially if I've got proprietary information that they wouldn't release even in the quarterly reports. You know, we had a crap ton of that stuff because, you know, I've got all sorts of planning documents and spreadsheets and you know, for what we're planning on doing over the next 12 months. As a private firm, none of that's disclosed. All right. If I've got that from a publicly traded company, no, if I trade on that, that's illegal, period.
It depends on who you are.
Well, it appears to, doesn't it? Because, you know, you look at these people, they go into Congress, they don't have a pot to piss in, and then, you know, 3 years, 4 years later, they got $20 million.
Why do you think people want to be a primary dealer for the Fed? Because the Fed says, we're a buyer today. It's the firm's job is to go accumulate the stuff and then turn around and sell it to the Fed. And they get paid a commission. Well, they know they got a buyer behind them. I mean, you and I don't. You know, it's interesting when you talk about people making opinions. And I remember this because I wanted to be a trader even back then. Somebody asked Milton Friedman about insider information trading on it. He goes, "You shouldn't even worry about it. Let the market take care of itself. It can police itself better than the government can police it." Now, you might ask yourself, "That's a really stupid thing to say." And in today's world, I don't think Milty in his grave would want that statement on YouTube.
Yeah.
But if you go back to the time was you saw everybody you traded with. You either were a specialist or somebody walked into your crowd. So the idea of if IBM's earnings came out at 10 o'clock and somebody scurries in there at 9:58 to buy a boatload of calls and all of a sudden the earnings are good, well, you're going to get caught once. The next time you might not trade with him. The third time you might dot his I. I mean, so they have to go through a firm, and the firm.
Well, that's cheat.
But now it's totally. We essentially have off the compliance of this. Let's say, for instance, people in Congress, the White House, which I'm convinced absolutely is front running these announcements. Well, if it was the old days and they had to have a broker come in there, all of a sudden the same broker 5 times in a row is going to come in 2 seconds before some announcement from the White House or the Fed, and people are going to go, people aren't that stupid. They're going to go, wait a minute, who are you? Who's your customer?
I mean, right.
You know, and by the way, we're not trading with you like ever again. I mean, well, but now now we're counting on the SEC to go after the people that are in power. Really?
Well, you look at the thing that happened with Hillary and those cattle futures trades. Okay, I mean there is statistically no possible.
Well, that was different. That was different.
It was different.
No, you know why it was different? Because the firm wasn't trading on inside information. They were taking the losers and essentially giving
them
money.
They were allocating.
Right, but that's not the same as getting,
listen, cheating is cheating no matter how you're doing it, all right?
The people that the firm traded with were not cheated.
No, but the problem is somebody, when you do things like this, when this kind of thing becomes the de rigueur, if you will, of the daily grind, right? Someone is always getting screwed. Because you know this as a trader. I know this as a trader. Everybody else knows this as a trader. If I buy a call and I'm right and the price goes up, the guy who sold it to me loses money. Okay?
Now maybe.
Well, he either loses money or he loses economic advantage he would have otherwise.
Right. Maybe if he's the one who covered right, his stock's up, so he's probably okay with it.
Well, if he's doing a covered right, depending on how far it's up, he loses his stock.
Well, if you had a broker like me, I would do the roll. You wouldn't lose your stock.
Well, I'm just saying, but he gets called away.
Yeah.
Okay, you know. So I mean, that's the thing, is that to some extent, yes, he does lose because he either doesn't make what he would have otherwise made, or he gets rooked directly. And the thing is that's just the way it is. You know, if you trade futures, if you're right, the guy is on the other side of that trade's wrong. All right. And the only time that doesn't happen in the market generally is when there's an IPO and the cash is going to the company. All right. I mean, otherwise, there's another person that has the opposite position on the other side of the transaction.
Some of trading on information is hard work. I mean, there were stories when I first came to the floor where there would be a little blurb in the back page of the Wall Street Journal about some company just lost their biggest client, and then the article might be four lines long. One day, some guy comes in and bought puts in this crowd, and people were all over. He goes, well, it's right here in the paper. He was the only one who read it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it just recently, okay, I had a position in a little dinky biotech that I'd had on for a while, and I put it on because I had read their publicly disclosed trial data and said, yeah, I buy this, okay? I buy their mechanism of action and the biology behind it. Well, you know, remember Farmer Bro? Guy goes to jail for fraud?
Yeah.
Okay, well...
Well, some of the stuff... The people that go to jail are sometimes a joke who they are. But.
Well, I get that. But he comes out on Seeking Alpha with a piece a couple of days before the trial results are announced and says, the drug is crap, it's not going to work, it's going to fail. By the way, the stock's going to get cut in half and ultimately they're going to run out of money and go bankrupt, right? And an awful lot of people dumped into that because of who he was. All right, I mean, you know, Shkreli, right? And he supposedly knows what he's talking about because he used to work in this industry.
Well, Bernie Madoff, same way.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, guess what? He's wrong. The trial results come out. They're wildly positive with p-values of 0.02 and 0.03 on the primary and secondary endpoints. And the stock goes up 500%. In about 5 minutes. All right. And oh, by the way, if you're short into that, guess what happens to you, right? Because it's a gap. So even if you have a stop, it doesn't do you a bit of good. And so, I mean, I have no idea if he actually... Yeah, it's one of the problems is you don't know if somebody like that actually had the position on. He said he was shorting it, but was he really short? I don't know.
Well, everybody since, you know, I'm not talking out of school here, but we've been in business for a long time, and don't have any to. I don't think we have any of these guys anymore. But for a long period of time, we had we managed money for several. And this is what's I think screwed up with the world now, but in a lot of ways. But we had managed for I'm going to say 7 to 10 doctor organizations. You know, the urology group of somebody in Jackson, Mississippi, or something. And they were great clients, and we did a real nice job until all of a sudden the lawyers said, "Oh no, you can't be keeping these guys' retirement funds." It was like a Keel plan in those days where the firm had the fund. They kicked everybody a 401k. So I think the assistant or the secretary would probably have much rather have us managing it than her doing it herself. But that was, you know, that's another story.
But
I mean, every one of these guys, we talk to them, and all doctors, all they do is talk all the time about new stuff coming out, right? And they really don't have any inside information that's real, but they all think they do.
Well, of course,
every single trade. We had stocks that, you know, I'm like, Dan, where's the stock? He goes, it's on the pink sheets. These guys they got this little device that are doing something. If a doctor used it in the hospital and liked it, immediately they would want. They didn't have any inside information. They just liked it. You know, oh, this is going to be the best. We had stocks. I mean, guys would buy, and half of the shares are like, 10 cents or something. So these guys are at like 100,000 shares. I don't think any one of them ever did what they thought it was going to do.
So like during the crash in 08, 09, I was scouring this sector because I actually understand a fair bit of organic chemistry, right? And so I can look at the molecule description. I can kind of assign, okay, what do I think of this? And maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. But I was looking for things that were long because I was sure, there wasn't anything that I thought was worth buying in the general marketplace, right? So I'm like, well, you got to have some balance in what you're doing. and I don't. So I'm looking for this, and I come up on this little company called Dendrion
I remember those guys.
Right, they claimed they had the answer to metastatic prostate cancer.
Yeah.
Okay, that they actually had a cure for this. This was of course their marketing speak, right? That now of course it's in trials, so whatever. And I look at it, there's no way this is going to ever work. Maybe it will help to some extent. But it is absolutely not going to stop it and have somebody, not die of it. Okay, you may die of it, but, 3 months later or whatever. Well, it turns out that I've got synthetic positions on in the options market, and the bottom line is I'm short substantially. And the trial results come out, and it gives you 4 months, and it's 100 grand, and then you die anyway.
Yeah, what's that?
Well, that's not so good, right? So needless to say, they took a header. Ultimately, I think they got absorbed by somebody else.
Well, that's the whole problem with those kinds of companies, because they had, a group that were really into this. And time again, they finally, I had a big meeting with them. I said, guys, look at the industry you're doing. I said, you're doing this because there's 10 of these outfits. They're all, cheap. They all have got a good idea. And you're attempting to have one or two hit out of the 10, and if you do, you got a home run. But look at the industry. Every single time one does hit, they never make the money they're supposed to because some big firm gobbles them up. You end up with butt kiss. You end up with the $5 a share, which is fine, but it really should be $50 a share, and the other guys get the 45. So When you lose, you lose, and when you win, you don't really win.
Well, that was yeah.
Is that right? I mean, it's a horrible description of it, but it's pretty damn true, isn't it?
No, but it's true. It's like this little biotech now is trading about $27, okay? And the thing is, they think they may have a technology breakthrough in how these drugs are delivered. Now, if that ends up being true, this is not a one-hit wonder. All right, now the disease that their drug works on is DMD, Duchenne's muscular dystrophy, which is an especially nasty form of it, and it's an orphan. It doesn't have that many people that are afflicted by it. But the thing is that if the underlying technology works, somebody's going to come in there. Now, this is not a company that trades at $27. If it works generally for drug delivery, this is a trade. Company that trades at $500 a share, okay, because it's that big. If it's generalizable, I have no idea if it is, and I'm somewhat skeptical. But the thing is, somebody's going to come and take them out at 100.
Yeah, or they're going to bury them.
Or they're going to bury them. They're going to find some way around the patents and destroy them. And so you could look at this firm and say, even today, with the monster run that they had over the last couple of weeks, that you know, Jesus, if this works, you know, that's a hell of a bet. The problem is you're going to get hosed if you're in that secondary run. Yeah, it's you're not going to get what should be there, even if your analysis is that this is going to work.
Quick story before we
don't have a good way to do that.
Quick story before we go to break. We had a lot of clients that came in and are buying, and this stock is going nowhere, right? And it's a group in Toronto. So I said, you know, I'm just going to go up and see this guy, and see if they got anything. It's not my job to do that for my clients, but enough people were involved in it that I'm like, I got to go see this guy. Guy invites me up. I drive up to Toronto because I got to see a ball game at Pittsburgh, and then I saw one in Toronto, so it wasn't so bad. I go to the guy's place, nice little, you know, kind of factory place.
Yeah.
And if you've ever had the pleasure of somebody thinking maybe you had a heart attack, and I'm sure a lot of listeners know what I'm talking about, they essentially draw blood, and there's an enzyme that your heart gives off if there's been heart damage.
Troponins. Yeah.
I knew you know the name. And there's they'll take it away for, you know, it takes an hour and a half or something. They come back and say you're not having a heart attack.
Yeah, troponins and D-dimer are the two that they look at. Yeah.
Yeah, and so, well, anyway, this guy has a little computer thing where you can do this in the ambulance.
Oh.
And get the response in like 2 minutes.
Yeah. That would be a big deal.
Yeah. So you could tell the person when you're driving the ambulance, driving the emergency room, this guy's having a heart attack, or no, he's not. You know, it's indigestion or something. You got to find it.
Something else.
And all of a sudden, he's doing this thing. And we had people here that owned, I don't know how our clients got hooked up. I never asked. It's none of my business. But we had people that had, you know, millions of shares at, you know, a tenth of a cent, that kind of crap. So the guy's telling me he sold a marketing agreement. It was to Merck or somebody. Of course, every time the thing got close to being marketed, whoever had the other machine, the one that took, you know, every hospital has one, or two or three, would always somehow, the FDA or whoever does that stuff popped out, oh, you need another test. Well,
right.
it costs like a fortune to put people in a hospital for like a month, and every time somebody came in, for you to test them on your machine and the other machine and do the correlations to see if it's good enough in their mind or something to say it's okay. Well, the guy ended up going out of business. And yet the thing was, it worked.
There was nothing wrong with the technology,
right? I mean,
but you know, Chief, there's so much. This is the thing is, this kind of stuff, if you're the people that are pushing, you know, that are basically on the other side of this, that are doing this kind of thing, that is exactly why 15 USC exists. Okay, it's the reason those laws exist, because that kind of, you know, the innovation in any market requires that you be able to actually do that. You be able to actually get out there and show the, you know, hey.
Well, what do you say we dash off the break and we come back? You can explain to me how we now have a population, with the exception of a few of us on this show, from the Oval Office on down, and not just them. I think they're getting a read of the rest of the people. The laws that you think are worth it for you, those are the ones you enforce, and those are the ones you pay attention to. The other ones, you get a chance to say which ones you like and which ones you don't. And it's not just coming from Pennsylvania Avenue. It's coming up from other people. And I don't know why we sort of turn that way, or whether I'm just getting a cynical view. But when you come back, you can tell us why gold's going up again today. S&P futures down 6, NASDAQ futures down 128. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Blowing up big Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. S&P futures down 5, NASDAQ futures down 124. Now, we were down a bunch yesterday, around like 300 in the NASDAQ, and came flying up on the close. I know some of that maybe is the government started buying bills yesterday or something, but the QE light, or whatever you want to call it, but a huge record in the Dow. A couple of stocks that were just way, way up. Today, Well, stocks up, Dow's up another 100. I've got NVIDIA up 125, Salesforce up 166, United Health up 137. Pretty much everything in the Dow. There was a huge run up in Visa yesterday for whatever reason. I couldn't figure out where that was going. We had some people with positions in Visa, but fortunately, we didn't have any calls against it. It was up like 5% or something, but I don't know where that came from. Maybe Carl does. Over in Europe, DAX up 34.1%, FTSE down 67 cents. Let's call that one flat. CAC round up 27.3%, so very slightly bullish over there. We're in Asia. These guys have been all over the block, but now today they're all up. Nikkei up 687, 1.4%. Hang Seng up 446, 1.7%. Shanghai up 16.4%. They are kind of following us, and I think the free money is probably going to go all over the world here. The 10-year rate is, where are we? The Bund is up 1 basis point, 2.86. 10-year is up 4 basis points. We're up at 4.17, which even if you don't look at this stuff maybe as detailed as I do and Carl does, you got to be smelling a rat as these short-term rates keep coming down, and yet the 10-year and the mortgage are stuck. They haven't moved at all. If anything, they're a tad up. So this is not passing the smell test here. Oil down a penny, 57.59. And the question is, Carl, after the break, should anybody be in the XLE next year? I mean, God, we've got people that are in there. The first thing I'm going to hear beginning of the year, hey, should I stick with my XLE? And I don't know what to tell them. Brent down 5 cents, 61.23. Gold up another 59 bucks, 43.72. 7-week high, safe haven demand. Silver up 24 cents, 64.83. I can't believe I'm staying long this stuff, but I am for my people. I would say this is way too far, but you know what? Dow are 117 against the euro, so it's still it's been down for the week. British pound 133, almost up to 134. Crypto up 821, 92,300. It seems to be settling in this low 90s area. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sport. Don't even talk about the traffic or the weather. It's horrible.
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:36 a.m. here in Chicago. You're absolutely right, Chief. It's absolutely horrible today. 23 degrees right now with a high of 33. Mostly cloudy and chilly with a couple of flurries. Tonight will be brisk and bitterly cold with low clouds and a low of 7 degrees Fahrenheit. So you really want to watch out for that. Phoenix, Arizona is the total opposite. 53 degrees right now with a high of 79. Pleasantly warm with a temperature tying the record from 2010. Plenty of sunshine today. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low of 51 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Monroe, 17 minutes. We're looking at 31 from Edens from Lane Cook. Eisenhower from Wolf, 28 minutes. Iman Dan Ryan from 95th, 24 minutes. And lastly, 29 minutes, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan. Let's talk sports real quick. Blackhawks visit Blues in St. Louis today at 7 p.m. And we also have Kraken at Mammoth at 8 p.m. Falcons beat Buccaneers 29-28 yesterday, and this Sunday we have Browns at Bears at 12 p.m. The Bears are having a pretty good season except for the loss against Packers last weekend, so they're definitely hungry for a win. At the same time, we got Cardinals at Texans. Lastly, Bulls at Harness today at 6 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Are you going to the game? 10 degrees?
No,
I don't think that's much of a fan.
I mean, I don't think I'm a fan of anything enough to go out in that weather, you know.
I've done it so many times, never again. So, Carl, can I get a profit center? The alley here behind my place is so full of ice. I got a couple of buddies on the block, and they're older guys. They rent garages, like, down the alley, so they have to walk down the alley to get their car. But the thing is stone-cold treacherous. So I have a, since my garage got broken into, I have a, you know, a film thing where anytime it goes down there, it takes a picture. I'm watching one of my buddies going down the alley, leaning up against everybody's garbage cans and their garage doors, because it's, you know, by the door it's not icy, making his way down the alley. I almost want to put a sign on the garbage can: if you use this to brace yourself, please deposit $5 or something. It's like, it's only the middle of December. God, April seems a long way away.
The thing, you know, Chief, I think what you see, there is a point, and if you're looking at the data across the economy, you know, I mean, you see the run that's happened in gold and silver and some of the other commodities. Then on the other hand, though, you see the opposite side of it, okay, in the commodity market, particularly with oil. All right. Now, you would think, especially given what just happened with the Trump administration grabbing that Venezuelan ship, okay, the tanker. Yeah. By the way, and there's a lot of people that are screaming about that. Oh, you know, that evil SOB. Oh, but it was okay when we did the same sort of thing to Russia. Seems to me that you got to be consistent about this one way or another, right? Either you can't go stealing other people's stuff or you can. But, you know, leave that as, be that as it may.
The only thing I'm, you know, I've had pretty good discussions with a lot of my terrific guests this week. And I, you know what I'm kind of over? maybe because I've voted for half, probably half Republicans, half Democrats in my lifetime, and never really thought, you know, one group was necessarily me because they change and whatever. And I've never once put two and two together where if I see somebody doing something stupid in traffic, where I'm going to say it's okay because I saw somebody a mile back do the same thing. I mean, I really don't. I mean,
well, I got
you know,
it.
Lou was on me yesterday about the, you know, blasting the guys in the water.
Right.
And he said, well, Obama was looking for somebody somewhere, and there were other people in the car, and they went back. To me, that absolutely, and I'm not going to argue that much with Lou because I love the man, but that to me, what does one have anything to do with the other? I didn't like it when Obama did it, and I don't like it when this guy does it. But
well,
why can't I have that position? It is
well you can, but an awful lot of people don't, which is the problem. Okay, so it's, you know, my guy's fine when he does it, but the other guy's a jackass.
Yeah,
right.
Or somehow my guy gets to do it because he did. The other guy did it. That I don't get at all.
Yeah, and I got all kinds of issues with, you know, with this in general, and the problem with what we're allowing to happen, and we as citizens are the ones that are allowing this to happen. Okay, we all, every one of us, you, I, everybody else, it will not stop until the people put a marker on the table that you will stop it, or we will stop you.
Hopefully by the ballot box.
Well, how it happens is irrelevant, all right? It's going to stop because we've tried the ballot box for the last 20 years. Well, this guy's a jackass, so I'm going to vote for the other guy, right?
Yeah,
we've tried
yeah.
that. The problem is that then the other guy gets it. He wins, okay? I mean, you know, let's face it. An awful lot, I have said, really, since I've been making any kind of public appearance at all the way back to when I used to be on Chicago Tonight, but you know, the PBS station would call me and ask me to show up, and I said, look, the reality of it is everyone at the margin, which is what wins elections or loses election, everyone votes their wallet. Yes, there's always zealots that are like, I'm voting for, you know, I would vote for Satan rather than that other guy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there is always a group of people, no matter what the political system is, that will always take that position. They are just absolutely convinced the other guy is death walking in the door if he wins, he or she.
Well, there's a lot of economic.
But the thing is, Chief, is that it's the margins on a national basis and even within a given state. You know, I mean, I've lived in places. When I lived in Chicago, it didn't matter if I went and voted because my precinct was 80% Democrat. Right? And by the way, they had over 100% turnout several times too, which is a rather interesting thing.
Well, you know, you vote early, vote often.
Vote early and often was not, you know, it's said as a joke, and in many cases it really isn't. On the other hand, I've also, you know, I live in a place now where you could fire a howitzer down a street and you wouldn't hit a Democrat. Okay, so I mean, the same sort of thing on both sides. I've seen that. So whether I vote here, where I live in Tennessee, whether I vote when I lived in Florida, other than for local races, and that's one of the big screw jobs. There's all kinds of fraud in the way that they do off.
You realize you're just making a case against the Electoral College.
No, I'm actually not. No. The Electoral College is in fact the one thing that prevents every state other than California and New York from having any voice at all. So attempts to abolish that should be met with a noose.
See, I don't I don't necessarily agree with that totally. I would,
Chief. All I would do if I was going to run for president, and there's no electoral college, I would spend $0 anywhere that doesn't have enough population density to swing the outcome.
Okay, but here's where I'm. I would go with some sort of the Nebraska model, where the electors are chosen by the district. Here's what I don't want. I don't want Republican or Democrat for your vote to be wasted.
Right.
And I don't think my Republican buddies will be all over me because I'm so liberal. No, I'm not. I think that it's an outrage that the people in Southern Illinois that vote Republican
Don't
get any voice. The same right. way I think it's an outrage for the Democrats that happen to be in South Dakota to get no voice. I think that if there's 25 representative districts, state of Illinois, and 12 of them vote Republican, they should get 12 of the Electoral College votes.
Well, proportional EVs is different than getting rid of the Electoral College.
That would be my interim step. I would say that.
I'm just saying that there's. I don't. Now there are a couple states that do proportional.
It's Nebraska and who else?
Yeah, I think Maine does.
Hey, we have a little bit of time. I want to wander down a path here just a little bit, if you don't mind.
Well, I just want to put one thing on the table.
Fire away, because I interrupted you.
All right, so here it is. This crap needs to stop across the board, and the marker needs to be put on the table by the American public. If even 1 or 2% of the public was to say, we don't care how you stop it, you're going to stop it, and if you don't, there's going to be consequences, and they're going to be extremely severe, and you're not going to like it, because you just had this thing uncovered in Minnesota, which has been known for more than a decade, where the Somalis up there, not all Somalis by any stretch of the imagination, but a wild overrepresentation, were bilking the Medicaid and other systems, which got turbocharged during COVID because of all the relief money that was flying around.
Okay. And
now hold on a minute. Now the ringleader of this thing apparently was a white American, okay? Not a Somali, all right? However, it got embedded into the culture there. Now, there is a problem with this in that it's not local to Minnesota. There is very strong evidence that the same sort of scheme is being run in Ohio, and the biggest part of it there is this home health thing that Medicaid allows, where you can get paid almost $100,000 to take care of somebody who requires, full-time supervision.
Oh yeah, I get
okay?
it.
Okay, as home health care, as opposed to someone from outside. All right, so you can get this money to take care of your dad. Okay, the problem is, there's no verification that dad actually needs the care, or maybe even that dad exists. And so you have these rings that have put together. I mean, they're literally bilking the taxpayer out of $100,000 a person.
All right, everywhere. My issue with this is the tone that has been put on by this particular administration. It's always racial and at the base. It's the Somalis. It's this. You remember, you were on the show. I cannot find this, and you're good at this. I'm not giving you an assignment, Carl. You got so much to do.
Uh-oh.
But can somebody find that Washington Post 3 or 4 day article? I think the guy won a Pulitzer Prize on it. It wasn't. He described the horseshoe of despair, but it would. But if you went through that article, and I still remember a lot because you and I talked about it. And
yeah,
but. What's happening, the problem I have with this is we have some guy in the White House talking about how much he hates the Somalis. It's a horrible place. And he's got 15 laughing hyenas behind him laughing at every one of his jokes where he makes fun of somebody or place. Now, what I'm saying, I'm not, you know, that I would never say that this is a good idea. But now, when this guy wrote this article, he started in West Virginia. And he came across a double or triple wide trailer thing Yeah. All white people. And how many Czechs were going to that place? Like 10 or something?
And
nobody would allow in an inspector. And they said, what, two or three of the kids were getting Czechs because they had, what's the child disease that everybody's got? No, the one that we don't want to give the injections for. Not Nelson. What's the, you know what I'm talking about? Where the kids are all on the spectrum.
The autism stuff. Yeah.
So they claimed three of the kids had autism, but they would never let a doctor in to check them. And somebody else had something else, and somebody else had something else. And they were getting all these checks. Okay, they're white. Now, and then spin down to Mississippi, and I try and look at both sides of this. There were, in this one particular county, there was a doctor that was getting everybody on long-term disability.
Yeah.
From the Social Security part. And yet, they interviewed one of the ladies, and she had worked in a nursing.
You and I talked about this. Yeah. She legitimately was disabled.
Yeah, and she said, I don't know anybody I've ever known in this area that has a job sitting down.
Right.
She goes,
and she could work sitting down, but she didn't have any ability to be on her feet.
She said, if you get me a job sitting down, I'll take it tomorrow. But until you do, I'm disabled for what I do.
Right.
But I'm saying it's horrible, Carl.
It's not.
We have a group now that wants to make it racial, so people hate these people. Somehow you're getting screwed, is not right. Which is not
my
right.
My perspective from the top to the bottom has always been: I don't care what the color of your skin is. I don't care what your racial heritage is. I do believe that in this country we have a serious problem with letting people into this country who do not share and do not have any intention to convert to what we would consider reasonable American.
So you think
values.
the Irish ever did?
Over time, yeah. I think a lot of them did, and I'll tell you why.
How many generations do we have to give them? Like five, and I'm one of them.
Well, here's the thing, Chief. Before we had a welfare state, before we had the ability to basically grab from the taxpayer, you could run a scam, but it wasn't going to be on everybody diffused over 300 million people, okay? And the reality of it is, you either went to work or you starved. And that was how, now you could depend on private charity, which is fine, but nobody's obligated to help you, okay? You can beg, but I can say no. As soon as you put a system in place, which was the whole Great Society thing, and you can trace it all the way back to there. As soon as you do that, you make it possible for any organized group of individuals.
Kevin just sent us a question. When did Trump ever say he hated Somalis? Try about 3 or 4 days ago.
Well, look, my position has always been this. I don't care who you are. I don't care how it works. If we supposedly in this country, there is a defense against this that's built into the law at the federal level, and nobody ever manages to actually use it because neither party will allow it to be used. And that is the quitam statute, okay, that if I discover that some group or some person, it doesn't even have to be a group, it could be an individual, is scamming the government, a government program, okay, it doesn't matter what it is. I can bring suit on behalf of the government.
You see it happen in Chicago all the time.
If I'm successful, I get to keep the majority of the money. All right. So, oh boy, now is there? Hey, listen. If I find you stealing, $100 million, I don't think you get all of it. I think you get like 20%. I get $20 million. Pretty good.
How about going back to what you said a few minutes ago about the divide? I think one of the issues were back in. Well, I don't know. They were separated in time a little bit. But say, like, Chuck Percy versus a Paul Simon or an Adlai Stevenson. Neither one of those guys or none of those people, if Adlai Stevenson lost and you ended up with Chuck Percy, you were fine. They weren't very far apart. They were just a little bit. I think one of the issues, if you say anything bad about the current administration, especially if you live in Chicago, the alternative is to go into the arms of Brendan Johnson. Brendan Johnson has done more to give us Trump than any man on earth. There's a split here. Do you really care if your senator is Chuck Percy or Paul Simon? They're both terrific guys. They're both very, very well read. They're both educators. You know, Percy ran Bell and Howell. I mean, maybe you have a little bit of a bone to pick with one versus the other on a tax policy or something, but by and large, you weren't worried about either one of them doing anything really dumb, were you?
But that's no longer the case.
Right.
Okay. And that's why I say the people of the country have to put the marker on the table, because you're not going to ever get this fixed internally. You look at what's going on right now with this whole thing in the Senate and the House with the subsidies with Obamacare.
Yeah.
All right. They're going to expire. I don't see any possibility that doesn't end up happening.
Just let them die.
The problem with this is it's not just let them die, because what is the alternative is you bankrupt the federal government and everyone dies. All right. So guess what? When are the people of this country going to put the marker on the table that the 80% that's being wasted within healthcare doesn't actually deliver a single cent of care to a single person, not one second of a doctor or nurse? I'm talking in cost, the numbers spent, right? 4% of GDP to 20%. That is absolutely all being robbed.
Well, people...
And until people will that rag, stops...
People will... If, not so much anymore. But if people will rag and quote the oil companies.
Yeah.
They're ripping them off. Okay, now, if you went through, if you had a shred of sense, you would work your way through, these guys are pulling this out of the ground, God knows where. They're shipping it someplace. They're refining it someplace. Yeah. And by the way, I'm still paying, if it's $3 a gallon, it's $120 a barrel. Maybe it should be $110 or something. But it's totally different than a chemo treatment that costs somebody maybe $500 to make and charges $40,000 for it. We're not even on the same planet with this. And yet, people don't quite get... maybe we'd like to have one less oil company or one more oil company and make it a little more competitive. We're not even on the same page with this other stuff.
And the thing is that, you know, it's like I've pointed this out before on the show. My late sister, she got hepatitis C by doing the kinds of things that usually get you hepatitis C. And Medicaid, she was on Medicaid. Medicaid would not cover Sovaldi, which is an actual cure. All right? Now, hepatitis, of course, eventually will destroy your liver, one way or another.
Now, if they got a pharmacy benefit manager, got in the middle and got the kickbacks, they'd have been happy to give it to her.
Well, it would either be, you either get cancer or you get cirrhosis. It wrecks you, right? Okay. So the thing is this. I told her, I said, she's bitching up a blue streak about this because she doesn't have any money. And I said, go get your passport, get on a plane, go to India, $5,000, sit in a flea bag hotel for a month, for the 3 months.
I think you'd be in a nice hotel for probably $100 a night, but that's another thing.
Well, okay, but but she has no money, so a flea bag place, right? And the flights, the drug was $1,000 for the entire 90-day course over there. All right, so I'm like, go get your butt over there for less than $5,000. It's fixed.
How much, just out of curiosity, how much is Mexico? It had to be cheaper, probably not as cheap as India.
I don't know if it was even, at the time, if it was available. The reason I told her India is because that's where the drug was actually manufactured.
Well, you know where we should go for a week is to Bologna. You can get the full stem cell treatment in your... We can come back 20 years younger.
Yeah, but this is, and the thing is this, well, the other thing is, if you go, now I don't know if it's true anymore, but 10 years ago, you go over to India, the doctor was trained here in America.
Oh, yeah.
And the operating room looks like a freaking palace.
One of Audrey's pals, she owns a restaurant, Southside, a Thai restaurant, so she went back to Thailand to get some plastic surgery. Of course, the two of them were talking about that. I have no idea what the hell they're talking about. So I'm sitting there watching a football game. And she went to Thailand, she was... in the hospital, which is like a hotel, for a week.
Yeah.
They did some stuff. They didn't send you home with your face all black and blue. She looked fine when she came back home. It was like a tenth the cost of here. And she said it was like a vacation.
Yeah, well, that's.
And they said the guy was from Harvard, the guy who did it.
Yeah, yeah. The guy, he was trained here.
Yeah.
And it's like I've observed many times. This was back when I was running MCS. oh, you need an MRI? Well, you know, that's going to be $3,000. You can get on a plane, go to Narita, and they'll scan you and read it for $100.
You know, there's places here in Chicago now, $250 or to $500. Okay, but you don't even need a prescription. You just walk in and say, I think I hurt my ankle.
But no insurance.
Well, yeah, but that's okay. I'd rather.
But that's the thing is, it's, you know, hey, guess what? Isn't it funny how competition does the. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, wait a minute, this machine was invented, you know, 35, 40 years ago, right? They're not expensive anymore. Yeah, it still costs, you know, they use some helium and they use quite a bit of power to run because it's, you know, it's a big magnet. I get that.
They are noisy.
Yes, they are. But you know what? I got the one that's one generation back. That way it's not, you know, $500,000 to buy the thing. It's only, you know, I bought somebody's used one. It was, you know, it was $100, right? And so, you know, I got a hundo, and I can do a scan every, you know, once an hour, right?
Yeah.
How much money do I make? Well, you know, a couple $100 a piece? Yeah, a lot of money. So, I mean, the thing is that these problems are solvable if you stop the things that are blatantly illegal that nobody's supposed
Without
to
do. Without a doubt. Did you ever go into the first one I had years ago, the one that was the closed? Boy, did that suck. You ever have one of those?
Oh, I've never been in one, but yeah, I've seen them. Yeah,
they said to me, they go, you have any problem with claustrophobia? I go, no. I get in there and I'm going, my nose is like touching the thing. I'm going,
oh yeah.
If I was in a coffin, this is what it must feel like.
This would be about it. Well, you know, here's the thing that just hit, and I just put it up this morning. 2014, there was a paper that went through, it was a letter on another study that was published. It went through review, so it went through peer review, and it showed that the basis for the recommended daily allowance and supplementation limits for vitamin D was miscalculated by a factor of almost 10. Now,
more or less, we're supposed to have.
We're supposed to have more by a lot. Now, here's the thing about this. Vitamin D is not just about rickets and osteoporosis. At an extreme deficiency causes those problems, right? It is one of the primary immune modulators in the body. If you do not have enough of it, your immune system gets whacked.
And every male north of the Ohio River in the wintertime probably has a deficiency.
Everybody in the wintertime that's indoors, because if you go outside, you got jacket on, right?
Yep.
you're completely covered up. So in the wintertime, you can't get enough. In the summer, if you're of darker skin and you're north of roughly where I live, you can't get enough because your pigmentation is too great. You don't absorb it. So even if you're outdoors all the time, it doesn't do you any good. Here's the thing. This paper was published in 2014. There was zero follow-up on it. And it was not... The original recommendation came from a supposed meta-analysis that had a very basic mathematical statistical error in it. Now, whether it was intentional or not is unknown, but it was wrong. It's demonstrably wrong. It's not a close question as to whether or not there was a mistake. This is absolutely factually wrong, and nobody's touched this thing for the last 10 years. And when COVID started, there were several papers that were published before everybody started getting censored for saying anything that wasn't what they wanted you to say, that among older people, zero who were not deficient in their vitamin D levels died. None.
I know there was a big difference if you have your vitamin D deficient. I didn't know about the number was zero.
It was essentially zero. I mean, statistically, it was zero, all right? Because, I mean, you know, there were tens of thousands of people that were falling over dead. Here's the thing about that. Now,
how about hanging on to this till Tuesday? Because we're
well. And I had a caution on this at the time because I'm like, you know, look, if you're in a nursing home, you're probably not getting any vitamin D from the sun, right?
Well, but I'll learn, or one of us will learn more by Tuesday. But you can't just keep taking vitamin D pills because some people don't absorb them that way.
There's also a problem in that if you have too much, if your level is too high, it's actually extremely dangerous and can cause severe cardiac damage. So you have to be very careful.
But I mean, it's a question of absorption, not in taking.
It is both. Yes, and so there's.
You get older, you don't absorb it as well.
Well, there are people on both sides of the spectrum on this. Okay, yeah. Some people are hyper responders, some people don't respond at all. So yeah, so it's not as simple as gobble a crap ton of it. That's a bad idea. So yeah, but this is but again though, Chief, no follow up in 10 years.
No, well, we're too busy doing other stuff.
We're too busy trying to make a bunch of money.
Before I let you go, every fiber of my trading being says, you gotta lighten up on the silver and gold here, and they're both to the moon again today. And yet I keep looking at these guys pouring money in the system, and I go, I used to trade like everybody was rational.
They're not.
Now that I'm trading knowing people aren't, I'm doing way better for my people. I'm not so sure I'm going to keep nudging the puts up. I think we're going higher. For no reason other than what we're doing.
You know what? The problem with manias is that they do not make any sense. There is no logic to them. But the other issue is that when they break, they're really, really bad.
Well, that's why
when the fever breaks, it's bad news.
That's why I got my trailing puts behind. So
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I know. But I normally would say, wait a minute. 35 to 88 in 1 year. I think it's time to lighten up. And I don't want to buy anymore here, but I don't know if I'm going to. We're doing.
Chief, I look at some of these companies that have announced and you know they're trading. I look at what's happened with Carvana.
Oh yeah, we were talking about that last night.
I mean that's nuts. Okay, I mean this is a company has a forward 77 PE, and is in debt up to their eyeballs.
Yeah.
All right, and I mean I looked at their balance sheet. I'm like, oh my God, how in the hell did they have that?
Plus,
I
can't believe their model of stupid buildings they have for sell cars.
You know, the first time I saw one, basically a car elevator, right?
Yeah,
with glass walls. Yeah,
it's unreal.
I'm like, what?
All right, well, have a good weekend. You're not going to be as bad here. You want to come up and go to the Bear game? 9 degrees?
Oh no, dude, we're going to get hammered. Sunday, we're going to have a low in the single digits here. I think
we're a high in the single digits here. Hope that heat pump works, but.
I've got dual mode. I got gas, and it'll switch over.
There you go. S&P futures down 2. NASDAQ is down 104. Back on Monday, Stacks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.